Evening, folks. It's Kalk van der Merwe, and you're listening to Radio Free South Africa on Radio Revolution.radio. As usual, we have very interesting guests tonight with us. I would rather say, as per usual, we have Jason Bartlett, the young hero, actually walking from Texas, all the way from Texas to D.C. in the United States to bring awareness as to the terrible state of the farm murders, the attacks on whites, etc. in South Africa. And then I have two esteemed gentlemen from the north, from Scandinavia, Mr. Andreas Johansson and Mr. Mike Uvila from an organization called Nordic Resistance. Thank you very much for your time that you made for us, gentlemen, and welcome. How are you, Jason?
Hello, sorry. Yes, I am doing very well. I've officially walked 1,000 miles.
1,000 miles, and the feet and the shins and all those things, are they good now? Are they better? How's things going out for you? How's things working out?
Yes, I cannot be more happy. I'm doing very well. The hills have come alive. I don't walk 30 miles every day anymore. I've slowed it down to about 20 to 22 miles, but the hills are taking their toll. However, my shins are healed, my ankles are healed. I'm feeling great, and I'm feeling as fit as a fiddle.
Excellent. Where are you now? Are you already at the Appalachian Mountains, or are you still in the south? Where are you at this point, Jason?
So, Skulk, I don't know if you heard about that massive tornado that hit in Nashville and in Cookeville. That slowed me down quite a tremendous amount due to the fact that they had closed roads. So I was cancelled for 2 days, and then I unfortunately got the experience to walk through right where the tornado hit and saw families, and the police let me walk through there, and I made a video of the devastation. So just due to the fact of the tornado and the severe weather, it did slow me down approximately 3-4 days. So I haven't reached the Appalachian Mountains yet. I'm about almost in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Excellent, excellent. So you're still in the south. You haven't gone over to Yankee Land yet.
So no, the Mason-Dixon line is separating, you know, civil people from a bit crazy every now and then. I've been informed. Those are not my own words, but that's what I've been let know, that the Mason-Dixon line is going to invoke a lot of interesting things. So, yes, I'm going to be seeing the mountains very, very soon.
Excellent, Martin. And then our other guests, Andreas, how are you, my friend? And Mike, how are you, my friend? Thank you very much for being here.
Yes, hello. I'm very good, very good. Thank you for having us on. It's going to be a very nice, interesting conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. I'm doing fine. Doing fine. It's a little bit crappy weather around here compared to, I guess, Knoxville, Tennessee, but we're managing.
I would assume it's still a bit crappy there, but your summer is coming. Our winter is coming in the southern hemisphere. I'm sitting in South Africa, in the Free State Province in South Africa, so we're seeing the change of seasons here. We're heading for our winter, but that at least you can look forward to a few months of a little bit more heat.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just try again. Gentlemen, maybe you can hear me at this point in time.
Yes, now I can hear you a little bit.
Excellent. I refreshed my data feed. I was just simply asking, please tell us about your movement, and especially as white South Africans, what can we look forward to? What can we see in brotherhood to watch your movement?
I caught some of that. I think you were asking about the movement. So the movement is called the Nordic Resistance Movement. It is a Nordic National Socialist movement that is main goal is to unite the Nordic countries, which is Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Iceland, into a National Socialist Republic. And we are currently organized in all the Nordic countries, and we have activities, and we try to reach people with our message. We do a lot of media, we do news, we do radio, TV, to spread the word of National Socialism. And, you know, a lot of people hearing the term, I don't know how often you talk about things like National Socialism, but people might be familiar with the derogative term Nazi. And I guess that's what we are for most normies. But we're striving to rehabilitate National Socialism and, you know, make it our own, which we have. We have a party program which outlines our politics and our goals. And, yeah, I don't know if I'm coming through clear. Can everyone hear me?
I hear you very, very well. Yeah, thank you, Andreas.
Okay, very nice. Do you have something to add, Mike?
No, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. So, yeah, driving for a better we're pushing for a better
it's, north. It's been around for 23 years, so it's not new. That's all.
That's amazing. I wasn't aware of that. When I did a little bit of a background check on you guys, I did not realize that it was as old a movement as 23 years. Now, that's very interesting. Through the years, through the two decades of your existence, has there been substantial growth in your organization, or what's the take-up in those Nordic countries that you're speaking about?
Well, I'd say that there's been a constant growth for probably obvious reasons. We don't talk about how many members we are, because why let the enemy know? But yeah, there's been constant growth, and especially that. Would you say, I guess, like the last 6-7 years, it's been very, very big growth?
Yeah, it has been booming. And, you know, a lot of it is due to massive invasion of our countries. It's definitely a driving force that people are becoming more nationalistic. You know, they're having this nationalist awakening. And we're trying to steer them in the right direction. There's a lot of different factions going on, especially in Sweden. Different nationalist factions, but we as National Socialists are uncompromising with our message. It is basically racial politics, whereas your normie nationalists, you know, they could accept some immigration, and they can accept integration and all kinds of things. These are the things we want to push, you know, harder to. Basically close the borders and start repatriating people instead of integrating them, because we see integration as genocide. But yeah, the mass invasion since 2015 has definitely driven up our numbers, and we're trying to make the best of it.
And I think a big factor, especially in Sweden, has been that not only the migration, like the mass influx of non-whites, it's also that people are finally kind of realizing that the so-called Sweden-friendly parties or so-called nationalistic parties, they really aren't what they're saying, that they're more like controlled opposition. And more people are waking up that if you actually want big changes, radical changes, you need a radical ideology and you know, start from scratch.
Yeah, and I think it's our goal to expose these people for the hypocrites that they are when they're calling themselves the nationalist opposition, and they're doing all kinds of dirty deals, you know, appeasing the ruling parties to get into the mainstream politics.
Visiting Israel and stuff like that.
And such, yes.
Because that's been the big problem in South Africa also. White people in South Africa tend to vote for the Democratic Alliance or the Freedom Front Plus. And both of them, the DA is leaning left, but the Freedom Front is leaning slightly right. But to me, they are also controlled opposition. And I don't want to talk it tonight, but Jason, I think you also experience it, that the mainstream conservatives in South Africa, the conservative parties in South Africa, they don't really go for the causes that's really key to the heart of the people, being white genocide. Let's call it what it is. Because we are experiencing white genocide in South Africa. It's not a theory in South Africa. We're experiencing it as real life. And they tend to skim away from that, to always soften the thing and make it a little bit easier for the ear. But they're missing the point of what they're talking about.
The main issue with traditional conservatism is that, by definition, conservatism is about conserving things as they are. Basically, that's what it comes down to, because if conservative ever would have succeeded, we will still have, you know, a feudal society, basically. So that means that they only want to conserve the current state. Conservatism also attracts a lot of individualist people who care more about creating a monetary future for themselves or their closest family, relatives, and so forth. So that's basically why conservatism as is always going to fail the people as a whole, because it's not looking at the people as a whole, it's looking at the individual. And I think South Africa is a perfect example why democracy doesn't work. It is basically the best case study we have of how bad it can be when you let everyone vote and have a right to have a so-called deciding factor on how the country is ruled.
Yes, exactly. That's our experience, and I think that is also, Jason, if you wanted to come into the discussion, that's also why a Jason exists, and the Skalk van der Merwe exists, and the Radio Free South Africa exists, because mainstream is failing us. It has failed us. And that is why we end up with a young gentleman walking from Texas to D.C. in the United States to go and advocate for help. Jason, from your side?
Yes, Skalk. I mean, I was listening to the whole conversation, and I can really agree with that. Now, you know, especially when they say certain borders need to be closed, because you know, it's all good and well letting people in, but you can't let people in and then allow them to change your country's religion, your country's whole future. If you take a look at the United States, as well as South Africa, and as well as a lot of European countries, you know, you've got people like Bernie Sanders running here, and he's got this massive support of Muslims, and they coming in. And what does a Muslim want to do? He wants to get rid of Christianity completely. So you've got someone people that want to come into these countries, including people in Europe. And we've shown it exactly in Africa, what, you know, a paganistic fellowship of people can do and what they do. And it's not right. It's not about, you know, hatred. Hey, we are this religion, this is our beliefs, you're not coming in to change it. You're going to come here and you're going to abide by our laws and you're going to add to our country. You're not going to take away from it and make it your own country, because then why don't you just stay the heck where you are?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's what's also causing what Andreas and Mike is describing, the response to that in Europe, and especially in Northern Europe. The old East Bloc countries, especially Hungary, we're seeing a response to these people flowing in and trying to change European white culture. Let's call it what it is, Aryan culture. They want to change Aryan culture, whether that be Christian culture or Germanic heathen culture. It doesn't matter. It's the white Aryan culture of Europe. Also transplanted to the north of North America, to South Africa, to Australia, to all the white countries. That is what they want to change. And that is what we need to stop and block. It's not about anymore. It's about survival. That's my take on this. Andreas, Mike, what's your
exactly response? That's what I was going to say. And it's something that I hash out with people when we're on the streets handing out flyers, and you talk to just normal people on the streets about immigration. Is usually the hot topic. It's either that or the Holocaust. But when you're trying to talk to normal people about basically hundreds of thousands of people coming into Sweden every year, it's about 1% of the population being added. And these are racial strangers from the Middle East and Northern Africa. And the thought has never crossed their mind that when they're talking about refugees coming from wars and, you know, just fleeing bad times, when are they going back? You know, it's all this strive from the government to make these people Swedish. They're giving them permanent residency, and then they're striving to make them citizens of Sweden, and then they just call them Swedes. And when you're doing this 1% every year for 10 years, now we've got 1 million racial strangers in 10 years that have come to this country. And it's completely changed a lot of the areas that, you know, just 5 to 6 years ago were okay. they're now in chaos, and some people are referring to them as no-go zones. But obviously, the mainstream media and the government, they're not calling them no-go zones. They're denying that they even exist while they're trying to combat all the violence. We have now daily gang shootings and bombings going on in most of our major cities. And the drug trade, the weapon trade, the prostitution, the robberies, it's just getting out of hand. But it's only being reported by the alternative media. So when you talk to normies on the streets, you're trying to, I don't know, make them understand that, well, in another 10 years, it's going to be even worse. It's going to be exponential. It's going to be complete chaos. So we always talk about the people. We are the Nordic people, and in Sweden, we are the Swedish people. We are white, and we're Europeans. You know, if you bring in all these strangers, it's going to change the country, and it's going to change our lives.
And once again, this is not theoretical, because we have an example, and we have an example in South Africa, where the old so-called white South Africa was white. It was a white country always. That the black people were living along the borders of the 1913 Land Act. Those were the areas where they always lived. That is where the kingdoms were and their chieftainships were. White South Africa was white, and that is why you had influx control. But when influx control was moved, they simply swamped into the white areas to such an extent that we are now a very small minority inside our own country. Once again, it's not theoretical. For the Swedish person, he can just simply come and look at what happened in South Africa. Of course, there's a lot of Swedish influence also that led to the ANC being and the apartheid system coming down. We know that, but you can see as the Swedish people what the work of your hands were. Jason, you can explain, because obviously by tomorrow, if people are listening to the show delay, they're going to hear what our experience is. What is your experience? Why are you walking to Washington, D.C.? Why are you basically killing yourself doing something as crazy as that, or as honorable as that, but as crazy as what you're doing? Why are you doing it?
A lot of people in America and in Europe know what's going on in South Africa, but it's absolutely barbaric and it needs to come to an end. They are physically going out and torturing people for hours. They are dissecting them. They are cutting their limbs off. They are gouging their eyes out. They are pulling their fingernails out for hours on end in front of the wives, in front of the husbands, and in front of the children. When they rape the 1 month or 2 or 3 month old babies, they do it in front of the parents to scare them. It's an exact example. It's the exact definition of terrorism. They are terrorizing the white minority race, because if you take a look at what it means to be a farmer in South Africa, it's one of the most dangerous jobs, if not the most dangerous job in the world, given to the ratios. And even the person from Genocide Watch, I believe it was in 2013, stated that out of all the murders he's ever seen, he has never seen something grotesque and as evil and disgusting as the South African farm murders and murders towards the white minority. So in order for me to walk 1,500 and something miles is nothing in my heart, due to the amount of pain and sorrow that goes through the families, and as well as the people, because we are absolutely broken and we're in dismay, because our president has successfully, like he stated, put us into a pot like a frog. And he has slowly started to boil us alive, and nobody's got out. And when a person like myself got out, I had to decide, do I get out and look after myself, or do I get out and say, okay, there's not one political party in South Africa that is willing to stand up and tell the whole truth. So I stood up, said to me, well, you know, one man can make a difference. Look at the Jesus Christ. He made a massive difference in everybody's lives. Whether you believe in him or not, he still made a sacrifice that is unbeknown to most people, but to the world it is known. And, you know, so I stood up and I said, I'm not going to say I'm not going to say this is okay anymore. I'm going to be biblically correct, because politically correct is an absolute lie and nonsense. If you look at everybody in the mainstream media, they're all politically correct, but it's become so distraught that nothing is no longer true. And that's why I believe I've got such a big following recently, is because there's someone finally actually stating the truth the way it is. And what I've told them and showed them is it's not about race. It's about the mere fact that it is wrong, and why are we not talking about it, and it needs to be spoken about. That's why I'm walking.
Excellent. And I like that point that you're making. Once again, we're not politicizing, we're not politicking about this. It's about survival in first place, but it's also about right and wrong. And I think that is also why the people in the Nordic countries are slowly but surely waking up to the wrongness of the situation, the wrongness of seeing totally foreign people walking around on your streets, even disregarding your country and your culture and your religion. It's wrong for people to live in that way. It's not needed. We haven't gone over to the Middle East and took over those people's countries. We didn't go to Israel and took over their territory. So why must it happen in the so-called white countries? What makes us then less people or less people, so that we can be handed out this terrible treatment? Why is this happening? It's simply wrong.
Because it comes down to race. They want to eradicate us, and the quicker we actually accept the fact that this is a racial war going on, the better we're gonna be. The more chances we have to react in time. Because here's a fact through history: white people tend to get pushed around a lot because we don't want to fight unnecessary fights. But once we wake up, we tend to kind of decimate everything in our way. And I think it's time for people to kind of stop kicking the can down the road, stop trying to find that it's about politics or even religion or whatever. If you want to make sure that these things end, you have to fight back. There is no peaceful solution to the killings of white South Africans. It's just a fact. You've been trying to find peaceful solutions since the end of apartheid, and it's not worked. What guaranteedly would work, it would get pushback, but what would work is if people actually fought back. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If they come and kick in your door, you kick in five of their doors. That's how it's going to work. But white people, for some reason, are so pacifistic these days that they're just basically committing a very slow suicide while not being even aware that they're killing themselves. And this is something that people need to kind of wake up to, that you can't just sit there and hope that somebody else is going to fight your fight for you. You need to do it yourself. And you need to get together. You need to put things aside. Like, if somebody likes pink and you like blue, who cares? As long as you can fight together for the white race, do so. But we need to stop bickering and start fighting as a united front. And I think I hear these debates going on all over the white countries. And it's sad to see that so few actually talk about the hard reality. That is that it is a war. Whether we like it or not, we have people, our political elite wants to eradicate us for some reason. I don't know why. I can guess. The Jews want to get rid of us. The Negroes want to get rid of us. And the Arabs want to get rid of us. So that's how it is. We need to accept that and work from those parameters.
You see, I can completely agree with that, because it is a race war. But what they've done is they've manipulated us to make it seemed like we are the ones that are invoking the race war, which is the absolute rubbish. We are the least racist out of all the races, because they've become extremely racist towards us. And I'm sure you can all agree with me, because you can see who's the ones in South Africa killing the people. It's not the white farmer going out murdering the black person. Let's just be frank. And I agree with you. It is time that a person says, hey, we're not going to say yes to this. And then they manipulate people in South Africa with the Bible, even though they meant to be standing strong on the Bible, because they don't incorporate it into their lives enough. And you have to defend against evil. There's nowhere that it says that you can just accept this evil and let it happen. So I can really agree with you there. And we should not feel guilty for who we are. God created us wonderfully and fearfully the way we are allowed to stand up for what and who we are. I agree 110% with you.
Yeah, and I want to come in here because at the start of the show, when you introduced yourself and I introduced your movement, we said it what it is. We called it what it is, National Socialist. And I'm sure when I said the word National Socialist, a few informed people nearly dropped dead to think about they are now listening to a so-called derogatory Nazi. The Americans like to throw that word around so much. I'm also a National Socialist. I'm a National Socialist since I was 12 years old when I read Mein Kampf the first time and I realized, but look, this is not a mad person that wrote this book. It actually makes sense what this guy is saying. So I'm also a National Socialist. And we need to wake up to the fact that we need to become radical in our thinking because the middle way is not working. What Jason is saying and what you are saying is true. It's not working. It's not working to find peace. We need to radicalize our own thinking and raise our people's thinking. And National Socialism is most probably, if not the only way to actually get there. That's my point of view of this whole thing. Andreas, Mike, from your side?
Well, National Socialism is the only ideology that's been proven to work. And it works so well that the whole Jewish elite, Americans and the Russians and the Soviet Union spearheaded the destruction of it. Every other ideology that has followed has failed utterly on it. The only thing they've given us is a society filled with decadence, with drug abuse, prostitution, people killing themselves because they don't feel happy because they don't have enough money to consume. So what we've got is total chaos. And why can't people wake up and say, like, hey, everything else failed. Can we please go back to the thing that worked? But for some reason, people are too scared. They want to disassociate themselves because they bought into fairy tales taught to them in school about the Holocaust and whatnot. They forget that it's always the victor that writes the history.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And once again, we're dealing with a pure ideology. If you really implement National Socialism as it is, it's a simple and a very pure ideology. It's made up of two essential parts. Nationalism being the one, you love your own kind. You do what is good for your own kind. That is not wrong. Once again, that's not wrong to do that. The socialist part, that throws a little bit or people a little bit because they think socialist and they think communist. But socialism in National Socialism is not that. It's not Marxism. It's not Leninism. It's not communism. What is the socialist part of National Socialism? It's your movement. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we have a really good article on that, actually, that goes through. I was going to look for the link for that. But what National Socialism is and why we as a Nordic resistance movement are National Socialists. But National or Natio or Natio, I don't know how it's pronounced, is basically to do with birth and like the birth of a people. And you have socialism is from socio, which means friend or comrade or like your community. So it's like a folk community. That's where I mean when I say Volksgemeinschaft. That's what we're striving for. And it's basically like you can take the analogy of having a family that you want to take care of. And the Nordic people is our family. We're racially very closely related. We have a very similar culture that has, you know, its own tweaks and stuff a little bit all over the place, but we are united in the sense that we feel like we have an identity. And when we want to build our society, we want to build it with this socialism that is going to help ourselves just like you would help your own family. But what we've had in Sweden, and you were kind of getting at it earlier about Sweden aiding the ANC, that is the social democracy in Sweden, which is basically slow creeping communism that's been creeping for 100 years. And what it's done is that it's got this international socialism, where you invite the whole world and you're going to make this, you know, race mixed consumerist utopia that they talk about. It's their, you know, wet dream for the future. But we want to take care of our own and keep our own people and preserve the Nordic people for the future.
Which is why we're not wrong to do that. Just to preserve the own. It's not wrong. Yes, Jason?
No, I was just going to add that even a more clear definition on what socialism within National Socialism means is basically, as Hitler said, I can read a quote here if you want to. So a socialist is one who serves the common good without giving up his individuality or personality and the product of his personal efficiency. Our adopted term socialist has nothing to do with Marxist socialism. Marxism is anti-property. True socialism is not. Marxism places no value on the individual or individual effort of individual efficiency. True socialism values the individual and encourages him into individual efficiency. At the same time, holding that his interests are as an individual must be in connoisseur with those of the community. All great inventions, discoveries, achievements were first the product of an individual brain. It is charged that I am it's charged against me that I am against property, that I am an atheist. Both charges are false, is what Hitler said.
Yes, yes, and it comes down to this Volkisch Gemeinschaft in Afrikaans. We have a very, very similar word, Volksgemeenskap. In other words,
yeah, that's very close to Swedish, actually. Volksgemeenskap.
Exactly. And it's an endearing term because it makes you part of a Gemeinschaft, a Gemeenskap, which is you feel part of a community. Because you're still an individual and we value that, we need the individual, but it's part of a greater community. And that's what makes this endearing to me. This is why I can accept what I hear from you.
Yes, for sure. That is correct. And you could say that, you know, we've had a pretty good time in Sweden under social democracy because it's been running for a long time, like maybe 50, 60 years ago. It was for the Swedish people in Sweden and all Nordic countries had some type of social democracy. But in the 1970s, 1975, Sweden decided to become a multicultural country, which in essence meant that the immigrants that were going to come to Sweden, and this is in those days you were talking about Eastern Europeans and Jews in particular, that they would be allowed or encouraged to bring their culture with them and have that as a multicultural thing when they came to Sweden, so that they would expand on their culture within our country. But two peoples living in the same geographical areas with different cultures will compete against each other. That's why we say that, you know, culture comes from biology. Culture comes from the people. So if you change the people or mix the people up, you will change the culture. And this is something that's very hard to drive home to these anti-immigrant Swedes that still want the integration. Because this is the integration. It's changing our culture. It's the way we live and how we see things. And it's also to do with religion, because we know that Islam is very strong and we know that Jews aren't going to give up their traditions as well. So we see this as a big threat. And it's something that we push very hard, that culture is biological.
And I think the reason social democracy in Europe why it was so kind of nationalistic in the beginning was that it got its start. It started to bloom after the Second World War. So they knew that people were looking for what Hitler had created. So they had to kind of give something that looked like it. So they like in Sweden, for example, they were very nationalistic in their message, and they adopted a lot of things that the Third Reich implemented. And then, but because the social democracy is an ideology that does it puts the workers into the center of the thing rather than the people. So once they had managed through policy to get enough people up from being so-called the lowest of the working class into closer to something that is middle income, they started to see that more people wanted to change, to see political change into lower taxation and so forth. So what they decided was that, hey, because we need more voters, so they started importing them. But with National Socialism, as long as it focuses on making the nation work for the people. So if the people change, the National Socialist will change with it and always make sure that we make decisions based on what is best for our people and our race. We're not interested in holding power in the sense of modern parties, because in a perfect society, if you think about it, the state is the people are the party. And the state is the people. So everything is derived from the people. There's no need to ask our people to divide themselves into 50 different factions. One is liberal, one is conservative, one is social democrat, one is leftist, and so forth. We should always look at what's best for the people. And I think that's where they kind of failed the people. And I think it was the plan all along. And the reason they opted to be nationalist was because it was convenient after the war.
Yes, and once again, coming back to the South African situation, the real-time experience of me sitting in South Africa, I've seen my country taken over by foreigners. Black people see themselves as the only Africans. That's not true. In South Africa, that is simply not the truth. The republics, the Boer republics, were created long before there was a nationalistic drive from the black people in South Africa. My family, the Fanamara family, arrived in South Africa in 1661. The Zulu nation just recently, Jason, you will know this, celebrated their 150th birthday. So in other words, my people, my family, have been in South Africa twice as long as the Zulu people. But we've seen in our generation, our whole country has been taken over by people that's totally different from ourselves. Their morals are different. Their culture, their religion, everything is different. And then they pursue different objectives, political objectives and economic objectives. That is why we're sitting in a black communist state in South Africa that is totally contrary to our volksgemeenskap, the way that Afrikaner people and Boer people do things. Because we've simply been outvoted and outbred by foreigners coming in. And that is what you're experiencing.
One thing I would like to add, what you said, that you're sitting in a communist I can't remember how you phrased it, but people, I think a lot of it should, every time communism is mentioned, we should always remind people who invented communism, and it was Marx, and he was a Jew. It is fundamentally a Jewish ideology, and it has no place among our people. It will never work with our people.
Yes, it's a control mechanism. The same as unbridled capitalism is a control mechanism. Communism is just simply a control mechanism where allegedly and apparently the workers and the masses are now empowered. But we see in South Africa that is also not the truth. We see black people today being more poor. They are more poorer than they ever have been. And it's just a small click on top that has all the power and all the riches and all the benefits out of the system. That is communism. It's a control system. It's not a political ideology, and that is why it can't work. That is why 70 years into the Soviet Union, it simply fell apart. You can't control people that long. They will rebel at some stage. It's our innate nature of doing those things. So, yeah, that's my take on communism anyway. So I agree fully with you. Andreas, maybe from your side, or Mike, any comments?
We're enjoying communism over here in Sweden now. I think it's going full bloom now. And yeah, it is what it is. And it's something else that you might be aware of. It's a term called anarcho-tyranny. And I think it's being applied in South Africa as well, where you have racial strangers, blacks and Africans and Arabs, they're allowed to run amok, you know, create chaos, rob and, you know, pillage. Whereas if you fight back as a white person, you're going to be severely punished for doing so. And this thing is getting more and more, you know, what's it called? External, like becoming more and more obvious that this is the case. So it's basically, you have to rethink when you are responding to black and non-white aggression, because you're going to be punished. And especially if you're just on the internet speaking up about it, the secret police will find you and they will put you on trial for hate speech, for talking against this multicultural utopia. And this is also very reminiscent of how it was in the Soviet Union when you spoke up against communism. You would go to these interrogations, the commissars, and get your, you know, your toes punched by hammers and stuff, tortured until you confess. And it's basically what's going on in a softer version of Sweden right now. But we're seeing a lot of people on trial for being for hate speech and such, and for fighting back against the invasion.
Jason, on your side, do you think you could have done what you're doing in South Africa? Or did the chance of being in the United States, did that enable you vis-a-vis what our friends from the North are saying?
Yes, I mean, I would never be able to do what I'm doing in South Africa. As to walk, do you imagine me walking with, don't disregard the flag, just walking as a white person from, let's say, Bloemfontein to Cape Town, which is 1,000 kilometers, there's no shadow of a doubt that I would be attacked on copious amounts of time, just like they said, by people just full of this utopia of all colors are wonderful except my color. I'm just a hated color. And, and then they say people, you know, get persecuted for that and for saying stuff, but I don't mind it. They can come after me as much as they want. I will still speak openly because I'm not portraying any hate. I'm just saying, hey, I like myself as well. I've done nothing incorrect. I've never held anybody hostage. I've never harmed anybody, and I was not involved in any evil doing. So, I definitely wouldn't have been able to do what I can do here in America, because it's still a bit of a free country. But the enemy is definitely brewing within, as like you can see, they're suffering in Sweden as well. And if it doesn't, something doesn't get said now about it, then like we all said, in 10 years time, it just, you know, it gets 10 times worse. So when is the time where you just say, okay, well, people can shame me and give me as much guilt as they want, but now I'm going to actually man up a little bit and say, you're not going to demasculate me, you're not going to crack down my God, and you're not going to crack down my color, and I'm going to stand my ground. And that's what I'm doing, and that's the way I see it.
Exactly, and I think when you cross the Mason-Dixon line, you're going to see a different America to what you've been seeing, because the South is still the South to a very large extent. But the moment that you're going into the so-called Old North, and especially the closer you get to D.C., I think the more resistance you will have. The closer you get to the powers that's not supposed to be, the more that resistance you will have, because you simply do not fit in with the narrative that they are trying to build, the narrative of a Sweden that's a utopia, and the narrative of a South Africa that's a utopia. Ramaphosa, the president goes onto the international media and denies. He says there's no such thing as farm murders. It's a conspiracy theory that brew on the social media. That's his words. They're trying to hide what is the truth, because it doesn't fit this narrative of the communist, of the Jew, of whoever wants to control us in the end. That's a fact. That's unfortunately how it is.
Yes, and the hate has definitely been brewing from within. You can see it in the United States, you can see it in Europe, and you can see it in Africa. These people hate so much that they get confused and mixed up, because now, for example, you know, people like the BBC and the CNN have been exposed for lying so much. So they've become indirectly our allies, because people have started to realize they lie so much about President Donald Trump.
why would they, wouldn't they be lying about the farm murders in South Africa? So we'll let them unravel the story. We will push it and they will unravel it. And they will just, because it's old sayings, you know, the truth always comes out at the end of the day. And it's going to come out because it's busy coming out because of people like me. And I've got no hidden agenda. I'm just saying, hey, I'm a Christian and I'm sick and tired of being persecuted and killed in a world where you call for freedom for everybody. I'm also a human being. I also deserve to be free. And my people also deserve to be free and own land that they have had since 1652.
It's such a valid point, and I want to come back to our Swedish brothers. We have about 3 minutes until the top of the hour, then we take a little break and we come back. But this is what we've emphasized so often on our show, gentlemen. Jason in the United States lost his job, his family, everything. He lost it in doing what he's doing at this point in time. There's no financial gain. There's no other gain. There's no fame. There's no fortune. I myself, sitting in South Africa, doing what I do, I'm actually putting myself and my family at risk. Let's be honest about this. You guys, I'm very sure your right-wing organization suffer the same folly as ours. We don't have any funds. We struggle with something as basic as funding. So that
yeah.
To drive this agenda.
Well, we do. Like the system has closed down our all bank accounts, which is actually illegal in Sweden, for example, but they still do it. We had a comrade of ours who burned his house down. Then when the movement collected money for him so that he could get his life back, the bank closed his account down and, you know, claimed some kind of terrorism related thing that, you know, and so forth. So it's constant pushback. And we have these Jewish Muppets, basically, or their slaves, meaning anti-fascists and so forth, that keep on, you know, harassing people in their workplace and calling their employees to make them fired. So, yeah, I think none of us ever has avoided consequences either with the authorities or then their political opponents, which seem to get free range. If we say something or do something, we're in court for hate speech or whatever. If they burn someone's house down, they stop investigating the crime. So I don't think people in general, like there's a lot of people out there who are couch generals. They're telling people who are active on the streets and or out pushing our agenda that they should do this and they should do that, but they never leave the comfort of their home or they never put themselves out there. It takes a lot of guts. Like it takes a lot of guts. For example, here, somebody who say lives in Europe and might think that, oh well, walking isn't that hard. But remember that he's walking across a country where you have a lot of very black neighborhoods where anti-white sentiment is a fact as well. He's actually not only putting his physical health at risk for the physical strain of walking such a distance, but there's an actual threat to his person. And for you as well, for hosting the show, we need more people like ourselves who are willing to put out and risk our own well-being for our cause. We don't need more people who have an opinion who aren't willing to do anything themselves. And we need more people to realize that, so what if I lose my job? My folk, my family, my people are more important than a job.
That's a fact. And I think that's also the driving force, driving me, driving Jason, driving a lot of nationalists in South Africa and obviously on your side. It's the pure love for our people. That is what's driving us. There's nothing else. There's no other reward for us to basically do what we do. And that is why I say we're following a pure ideology. We're following something pure and clean and right. And that emboldens me. It makes me bold to do what I'm doing. And I'm very sure on your side too. gentlemen, we literally coming up to the last minute. I think let's go and stretch a little bit legs and drink a little coffee. In about 4 or 5 minutes, we will actually then be back and take the discussion further. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Free South Africa and your host is Golf from Merwe. I have 3 guests tonight. Mr. Jason Bartlett, very well known by this time to our listeners. Jason, you've been on our show so often, working from Texas to D.C. in the United States to bring awareness to the cause of the white people, the white minority in South Africa, and everything that's happening there. And then Andreas and Mike from a very interesting organization that's 23 years old. I'm so impressed by that. It's called the Nordic Resistance Movement. It's a national socialist. They're not scared to say what it is. It's a national socialist organization in the Nordic countries, Sweden, Norway, Denmark. I'm not sure if you're in Finland also. And
Finland and Iceland.
Finland and Iceland, all the Nordic countries, and they envision a national socialist republic, a focused national socialist republic in the future of the far north of Europe. Gentlemen, we started to touch on something very dear to my heart, very sore to my heart, and that is where white people go against white people. And what happened during the years of apartheid in South Africa, one of the nations that was most proactive and hardest against South Africa was actually Sweden and to a lesser extent also Norway. And it was not only in rhetoric that they were against the apartheid regime in South Africa, the national party regime in South Africa. They actually funded and even assisted the terrorist organizations, the PAC, and especially the ANC. And there's evidence now that they even sponsored actual terrorist events in South Africa where very innocent white, black, all color of people were actually killed in those terrorist attacks. Do you speak about these things in your meetings and in your discussions in your organization? Is it a taboo subject? What's the situation now about that amongst your guys?
You mean South Africa in general, or?
Yeah, and especially the history of where Sweden as a white country was actually taking sides against another white country. Actually assisting terrorist events in another white country, because that is basically what has happened. Do people even know these things in Sweden? Is that part of the discussion, or is it a support of your subject?
Well, National Socialists definitely know, and a lot of people do know. But you know, we had Olof Palme, the prime minister, who was a real traitor in many ways, and I guess there's a reason somebody decided to shoot him. But that era was very. I think that was the closest that the Social Democrats ever became to being openly communist, I'd say. And I don't think even there's a lot of Social Democrats, like, you know, born and bred Social Democrats from that era that are very critical of what the government was doing back then. But as for speaking about, I don't think they teach it anywhere, but it's kind of a thing people know if they decide to know. But among National Socialists and nationalists in general, I think it's very well known that what they did in South Africa.
Well, I think in the normie sphere and among Social Democrats, it's celebrated, you know, the support that the Social Democrats gave the ANC. And, you know, Mandela is seen as a hero to a lot of people in Sweden. And it's interesting because this was one of the first public activities I did with the Nordic Resistance Movement. It's about 4 years ago when we were handing out flyers on, I think it's Mandela Day, it's called, where you're supposed to remember the man as some sort of freedom fighter. We were handing out flyers saying that he's a terrorist. You know, he's a convicted terrorist, and you know, he's aiming for genocide. We were talking about Winnie Mandela's necklacing and all those things with just regular sweets on the street. And it was interesting that this was in a very small town up here in the north of Sweden, and there was one guy that actually knew about all this. He came up to us and he said, because he was surprised. He thought that we were there talking about how great black rule is in South Africa, and he was annoyed. But then he realized that we were the complete opposite. So we do have we've made some efforts to definitely shine some light on white genocide in South Africa and its history with communism and Jewish infiltration and all that.
Mm. And the movement in Finland used to do a lot of activities highlighting the farmers the murders of white South Africans in Finland and bringing it to the attention of the people basically. But due to some pushback from the authorities, basically what they did was that they banned us in Finland. So it's been pretty hard to do that now.
Now that's very interesting because Finland was also Norway was always seen as an occupied country by the Third Reich, but Finland was an ally to the Third Reich, fighting the Russians, fighting the communists, fighting for the Karelia area that the Russians took from them, all those things. We know the history of Finland. That's very interesting for me as a South African to hear that in Finland people were speaking about farmers. I was not even aware of that, which simply brings warmth into my heart to think that people in Finland that far away, that there's no real ties with South Africa. They are actually also speaking about this and bringing awareness. But yes, as you say, there will always be that pushback from the authorities because it does not fit the narrative that's being sold. Yes.
Yeah, Finland is a bit special when it comes to that because we were a part of the Axis and most Finns know that had it been for Hitler's and his help, while our own people did fight a courageous fight without the help of Germans, we would have been very much worse off. It's basically, I'd say that it's the current generation of leaders that are pushing back more than ever before. And after the war, of course, there were different things because Finland as a nation was in between a rock and a hard place, in thousands of kilometers long border with the Soviet Union, and then so you kind of had to balance between being the East and the West. So we can't blame them too much, but it's this current generation of cultural Marxist leadership that we have that seem to want to hide the facts of stuff, but. The positive thing is that there's still the thing you can say about Finns that the most average Finns are pretty aware what's happening in the world. Sadly, they're not as good as voting accordingly or being active on the streets accordingly, but at least they know. And when I've been talking about the issues in South Africa with people, I've been surprised how many do know about the issues, even though it's not really reported on the mainstream media here.
That's excellent for me to hear. I think, Jason, you would also find that very interesting and very enlightening and very very positive to hear that our brothers in Finland actually also are making awareness for us. But I want to come back to Sweden. Now, the two gentlemen sitting here from the Nordic Resistance Movement, you are my brothers. So I'm not going to say the things that I say now towards you. But I think the ordinary Swede needs to hear what the legacy of the Mandela era and of the ANC is. And Jason is the best person at this point in time to tell us, because this is why he's walking to Washington, D.C., to go and spread awareness to the American government of what is going on. Jason, can you enlighten our Swedish friends sitting back in Sweden? Maybe they're going to listen to this program too. Can you enlighten them as to the legacy of what they support, of what happened to South Africa because of the Swedes, the French, the Germans, the support coming even from our own home country, if you want to call it the Netherlands? Can you enlighten us to that?
Yes, absolutely. There's two things that can make me nice and righteously angry. And the first thing is a person around the world that is the same color as me that says, oh, you come from South Africa where the hero Mandela is from. that really, really upsets me, due to the fact that they are literally worshipping a pagan that is known for killing people. And it doesn't take you more than 5 minutes to find out how many people Nelson Mandela was behind killings of. He was bombing the innocent children. And if you want to look at the current times and not talk about the past, look at the state South Africa is in. Every 26 seconds, a woman is raped. You've got more chance to learn to be raped than you have to read and write as a woman. Okay, so you need to realize that the Rainbow Nation that's created by Nelson Mandela is non-existent. It does not exist. It is a pagan nation based on communist and obliterating people. They are invoking a genocide where people go out and murder other races by the copious amounts. Every 3 hours, a woman is murdered in South Africa. And that's just women. I mean, people are necklaced. We are the infant rape capital of the world. And this is what Nelson Mandela stood for. He was a communist and a terrorist, an openly blatant communist and terrorist. And in order for anybody to support him, either you are not very clever and bright, or you have been deceived, but now it is time to start waking up. Because if you can just look at your cell phone and believe everything that you have been taught, then you are actually an idiot. You need to start focusing and saying, okay, I'm being taught by these people that know nothing. Let's ask the people that actually suffered underneath him. Now, Nelson Mandela created a legacy in the last 25 years. And look what it is. They are expropriating land. There's not one government entity that is working. And now they stand for taking your pension away, my pension away, without question. There are 450 million US dollars, a million rand in debt in Eskom. Now they want to take pension money and give it to the same thing. So just, you know, it's absolutely incredible the way they have done absolutely nothing. And the world just worships them. And the fact that they worship them is the fake media that is out there. So it's really time to actually grow up and start re-educating yourself, because you've been indoctrinated, not educated.
The so-called farm murders, I see that as a misnomer. It's not about farms, it's about white people, white murders. Is that simply a lie? Simply, as Ramaphosa said, a conspiracy theory that they do on the social media? Or is it real? Do you have real life experience of that?
You know, I've had a real life experience. I've had several, actually. I'm, you know, where I'm busy doing my interview right now, my girlfriend is in the next room. Her grandfather was actually from Austria, and he was beaten for 3 hours with a what you call a Knopfkiri, which is a walking stick. They danced around them and around him while they beat him, and then they strangled him with a telephone cord, and he died a month later. They also raped her grandmother to death. She died literally of her wounds from being raped by several of these men. And then you've got my cousin in 2018, just after I had visited them, were broken into, and he was shot through the back of the head. It came out the front of his eye, and miraculously, thank the Lord, he survived this. He was also strangled after he was shot. They strangled him with fish nylon and then burnt him with the barbecue grill. And then said, the white bastard is dead. Let's go for the others. And they went after my other cousins and my nieces, and they beat an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old with a crowbar, including my other cousin. They beat her with a crowbar. And then the police just say this is a normal break-in. In 2011, I was involved in an attempted farm murder where 8 of them attempted to get into my house. Luckily, I could fight them off, as well as farmers in the local area. When I phoned the police told me a word that is called footsack. They told me to footsack. It's not real. I must get lost. You know, they won't come and help. It's absolutely barbaric. I've had family members hacked to death and murdered. I know of a few families personally, because my dad is a pastor, so I've been called out with my dad to several farm murders, farm scenes. It's been absolutely atrocious and hideous what they do.
I
exactly. And that's real, real life experience. This is not made up. This is not something, if you didn't speak about this, this would not even have been in the media. Of course, in South Africa, there's been a media blackout for a couple of years. I fought the media in a campaign called Boycott Maspat National Press. I fought them with my comrades for many years because there's an actual media blackout. They've only now, about 2 or 3 years ago, started to report in South Africa about what is going on in South Africa. So I can understand that the people overseas don't even know the real specifics of what's going on. But yes, Jason is giving first-hand, real-life experience that he has, and his family members has, his girlfriend has. Once again, it's this whole thing of white genocide being a conspiracy theory. It's made up. It's not real. It's little pictures from movie sets that we've been posting on. It's a lie. We're experiencing every day it is real. And this is awesome. But I can tell my Swedish brothers and my Nordic brothers and my Icelandic brothers, this is what's coming to your shores through multiculturalism, through those foreign people streaming into your country. This is what you're going to experience. Any response from you guys?
We often refer to South Africa as it's a warning, isn't it? It's what's coming for all of us in white countries when mass immigration is going to replace us. And you're in a very extreme situation being such a minority to begin with, just handing over the right to vote to black people in a country where your extreme minority is very dangerous. And you're now serving as an example for the whole of the white world. And when I hear these stories about people being tortured to death and raped to death, it's so sad. It's horrible. I can't look at the pictures anymore. It's so horrible because I've been reading about it for years. And it is coming to Sweden, for sure. It's not as brutal. Maybe it is pretty brutal, but these basically cutting limbs off rape murders and killing little babies and all this really sadistic, and I hate to use the word racist, but it is, racially motivated hate violence against white people in South Africa is like the worst that I've ever heard of. But that's why we're fighting very hard. Because this is the future. If no one stands up, we're just going to end up like that eventually.
You know, it's very difficult to call it anything else except racial hatred when you take several hours to boil a 12-year-old alive in the bath in front of his parents. It's also very difficult to call it non-racial when they take a little white baby named Willemienke Potgieter and they hack her to death in front of her parents and just drag her and then make them suffer and push their faces in the child's blood and write on the walls, "We did this because you are white." It's very, very, very difficult. After they stabbed him 151 times, to say that it's not racist, because that's exactly what it is, and that's what we need to get comfortable talking about it, because they hate us with an absolute satanic passion.
Yes, indeed, and I believe that this is, being perpetrated all around the white world, and we have identified, Jews as responsible for spreading this vile lies about the white race, basically this anti-white rhetoric that's going around, agitating black people into hating us even more. Like, I believe that black people in South Africa and in Rhodesia, they had a different view of white people when they were living under white rule. White people were supporting black communities, and they were also laying down, what do you call it, like the hammer hard. They were hard against them, telling them what they couldn't and couldn't do. Because that's what they need. They need that kind of guidance. And the Jew came in and manipulated the whole society into this communist revolution and telling black people that they should have their own countries. And why are white people here? And, agitating against white people. And now today you basically have what you have because of that.
If you take a look at the old regime, And I'm not saying I stand with the apartheid era, but if you look at the facts and actual history, is hundreds of thousands of black people from Africa were trying to get into South Africa to have a better life under apartheid. Now that it is gone, people are trying to flee. I was on a program the other day where there was a black gentleman from Zimbabwe known as Rhodesia called in, and he was in London. And he stated to me, he says, Jason, I just want to say one thing. Our problems all started with the white people. When we started to kill the white people and chase them off the farms, we were famine stricken. And then things got so bad that he needed to flee his own country, known then as Zimbabwe. And he said he couldn't flee to South Africa because South Africa were too violent. The black nations in South Africa were xenophobic, that he couldn't go to South Africa as a black person. So he had to run to a country. So it's not just me saying this. That's why I've even said, hey, I stand for the Zimbabweans and the Rhodesians, because that's where a lot of my family comes from. I would have inherited farms there as well myself personally if it wasn't for that horrific moment of a farm expropriation they've now tried to blame on climate change, which is not climate change. It is absolute murder of white people and white farmers.
Yes, they basically wiped out the whole white population in Rhodesia. Now, Rhodesia, once again, it was not a country before Cecil John Rhodes. It was a colonial area, basically boarded it off and made the country of it. That is where Rhodesia came from. It was never a black country. The people living in Rhodesia, the Shona people, are not endemic to that area. They came from what is today known as Mozambique. And the Matabele people actually came from Natal in South Africa. That is where they came from. So Rhodesia was also a white country that was unfortunately in the end simply overrun by the black people. And yes, a genocide took place. There's not a white community of any note in Zimbabwe left today, the old Rhodesia. They simply wiped that whole community out. It's as simple as that. Jason? We're struggling a little bit to hear Jason. Andreas, from your side, that is exactly what is happening to Europe and specifically Sweden as a prime example today of where these foreign people, they come in droves under the pretext, this is good what we are doing. We're giving these people an opportunity to come and work and live with us and all these nice ideas. But in the end, it turns violent. It turns against those people whose country it actually is. And that is what you're going to face.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, white people are the only ones that have this universalistic thinking where we're, you know, concerned about other peoples and inclusion and all that stuff. All other peoples are fighting for themselves. They're in every conflict. They're taking their own sides. I think white people are too smart. They're coming up with all these advanced ideas of how to manage the world. And I believe the Jews have taken advantage of this and given white people different ideas that will divide them and, you know, make them feel special. And one of them is communism. And another one is libertarianism, for example, like these ideas of freedom, like freedom is the most important thing. This divides you into an individual. And this is something that, you know, Sweden has very weirdly adopted with the social democracy. We also have very much individualism with then feminism, you know, anti-family politics and divisive politics that have created this divided people. Whereas the people that are coming in now, the Arabs and the Africans, they are very much united in this tribal thinking. I think they have a lower IQ, but with that, they have a very simpler way of looking at the world. And they think, what is good for me? What is good for us? And that's how they work. And now that they're gaining critical mass in different areas in Sweden, we can see that they, in our democratic elections, they vote as a bloc. They don't care about the politics, whatever the politicians are saying. They're just voting for the same party, you know, so that their ideas win. They'll put up their own people on the ballot, and then they'll just vote for that candidate, and they'll win. And as they grow in our countries, they can take power in this way. And this is basically how black vote worked, but that was in extreme sense. But it's definitely going to get worse in Sweden. And then they're going to have their own parties and their own motions, and they're going to change our country in that way. But a lot of people, the nationalists that are waking up, they get caught with this anti-Islam, anti-Muslim thing, thinking that it's the Muslims' fault that this is happening. But it's not the Muslims that have been agitating for open borders. They're not the ones in the owning the media telling us that we should open our hearts, open our homes to strangers. They're not the ones paying the politicians to do what they're doing. So they're just a tool. They're a biological weapon that's being fought against us.
That's true. And it's borne out in what you can see on YouTube. You can actually read statements by prominent Jewish leaders. There's that lady that always haunts my imagination when I think about this. Her surname is Spector.
Barbara Spector, yeah. Paideia. Yes.
She's rabidly anti-white. She says these things in the open. And people, for some reason, they simply do not realize who the real enemy is. Now, I'm not being so-called anti-Semitic. I'm not saying hate Jews because they are Jewish. I'm just simply saying, wake up to who's causing the problem. And for instance, that lady, I've seen numerous of the videos that she's made. It's rabidly anti-white. Why can't people just not see what the problem is? Why is this happening?
Yeah, there's another lady famous called Ingrid Lomfors, which is the chairman of something called the Museum for Living History, which is basically some sort of Semitism going on in Stockholm. And she had a seminar where she invited celebrities and the king and a lot of the politicians, where she was talking about how Swedish culture is all imported. And it was a long seminar about how the gypsies have given us this and the Africans have given us this, and it was applauded by the king. So, you know, it's not just an empty conspiracy theory. It's definitely has something to it.
Yes, not very long ago, there was a controversy I know in Sweden where they portrayed the first Swedes, the people originally in the ancient times living in Sweden, as black people with blue eyes. Which is ridiculous. I mean, how black people have been there in the first place? We know how the Nordic people look like. You're the classic Aryans. You're the guys with the blonde hair and the tall heads and these things. We know how you guys look like. But that was created as your ancient history. You actually came from black people, which is absolute nonsense. And who is driving that? Once again, it's Jewish scholars, it's Jewish professors in universities telling people this is how it was. And because a professor or a learned person or celebrity is saying it, it's then accepted as true. And that is where the big lie comes from.
Yeah, it's one of their main tools for subversion is to remove the identity of a people so that they can get in and divide them and then confuse them about who they are so that they can't take their own sides. And this is where white people today are, when they're always infighting about the minutest details instead of standing united and fighting together.
Yes, that's so. I think it's to a lesser extent in Finland. I think you have quite a different history and a different background to what's going on in Sweden. Or am I incorrect in saying that?
Well, it's like I've said in our show that it used to be much better, but in the past 10 years, it seems like our political elite. We had a big shift in the leadership. A lot of the old politicians, while they were also bad, but the new ones are even worse. But we had a lot of the old guard retire from politics, and we got even more radical cultural Marxists, and we've been catching up really fast. We haven't had any government-sponsored shows pretending that the original Finns would have been looking like Somalis with blue eyes, but I'm just, you know, waiting for it to happen, basically. That from the government point of view, it is getting more and more obnoxious by the day. The people themselves aren't as brainwashed as in Sweden, but, you know, I wouldn't put down my guard. I would be on the lookout.
Yes, and I also wanted to touch on what was said earlier, the fight or the attack on the family, on the family life. I know in Sweden there was for a very long time also your whole social structure, your social workers and so forth. They actually had a very anti family agenda, breaking up families, taking children away from parents, stuff like that, where the state actually becomes the parent to the child, which is in South Africa. I have a very sad history relating to my own children, and I've experienced where the state and the court is more the parent, is more in charge than the parent itself. But it was done to a much greater effect on your side.
I think it's more prevalent in Norway, actually. Oh. Norway seems to be very much into this, taking the kids away from their parents than other Nordic countries. But we do have this systematic push of making it harder for people to have children, and especially in Finland, actually, this, or you could say the end of last year and the whole beginning of this year, there's been a lot of talk about from the politicians that our birth numbers are very low and that they need to do something about it, but the solutions is funny enough, more immigration and not actually making sure that you could have one parent at home, that you could live on one on-demand salary or whatever. It is this social so-called progress they're talking about, which basically means the doom of our people. And that is very prevalent, I think, all over the Nordics, that they make it more and more difficult for people to have a family and make it function well. And another piece of the puzzle is that because they degenerated the generations with Hollywood and all kind of things, and now you had dating apps like Tinder, so people spend more, to speak frankly, people spend more time fucking than actually making children and settling down and having a decent family life. They live for the moment and they don't live for their folk or their future. So it's a sad escalation across the Western world, and we can see it's basically all the way from the United States all the way to the Finland in the east, and then it starts to change in Eastern Europe, where family still plays a more important role in society.
Jason, you have something very interesting to say. You wrote on our board about the U.S. and anchor babies in America. What's that about, my friend?
Yes, we were actually taking a look at those facts. I think it was in 2018, in 48 states in the United States, there were more anchor babies born than actual American babies born.
Now, that's amazing.
Sorry, 2019. So in 2019, in 40 states of the United States of America, there were more babies born as anchor babies than there were in the American babies born. So that's in 2018 or 2019? 2019, my correction. 2019, not 2018. So last year. That means that people from countries, either they illegally come in and then they have a baby in one of those states and then they are allowed to stay there until the baby is 18 or 21 years old. 48 states.
That's amazing. I was not aware of that statistic. So in other words, and that's what the people in the Nordic countries are also facing, and ourselves in South Africa is also facing, although apparently we have a new boom in new children, apparently.
but we are literally being outbred by people from outside. It's literally what's going on. We're being outbred, and in a couple of years' time, the demographics of the state is going to be at the tipping point where you're going to sit with an aged population who can't produce new children, and therefore it's literally the end of that race or that society. That is what we are facing. We're literally facing extinction of whole races and whole nations. That's my sense of what's going on.
Yeah, but it was interesting when you were talking about the state owning the children, I think, something you were referring to. And in Sweden, in 2010, it became illegal to homeschool. And before that, it was even complicated to do homeschooling because, you know, the Swedish people have a very strong confidence in the state and anything that's state-related. They think that it will take care of them. And not a lot of people think about taking life into their own hands. But if you would, and you would decide to homeschool your children, it is now illegal. And if you try to take your children, just to keep them home for a while, you know, they're going to come knocking on your door and ask where you are, which kind of proves to me anyway, and to most people that are awake, that you don't own your own children. When they are born, they are written into the state's, you know, registry, and they are state property until, you know, they're 18. But still, as long as they're in Sweden, they're state property. So that's very much true. And I think we do have pretty harsh social services over here. We do have a lot of children that are being taken care of. And as you were talking about anti-family politics, I think it's more common now in Sweden to have a broken home. If it's a failed relationship or a failed marriage, than it is for parents to actually stay together. So they've been working very hard to make this happen. And now, you know, feminism is very strong in Sweden. Females, women feel it very important to study and have a career and a diploma instead of raising children and have a nice home. And, you know, it's very important for them to, you know, vote. I always say about feminism, when they gave the women right to vote, is the opportunity for the family to split into two different political opinions. Whereas before, the family voted as a unit. The same for the worker. The man did the labor, and he was the family was the working unit, and the man was the one doing the labor, and he got the salary for the family to survive. So it was pro-family in that sense back in the day. I was over 100 years ago now, but I think they took that away in order for the man and the woman to be able to be split up, and they've successfully done that in Sweden.
Yes, Jason, you're speaking of endocrining children. What do you mean by that?
Adoption children. So, you know, I didn't know that. That's a fascinating evil fact that they go and they indoctrinate these children. So you're not allowed to homeschool them, so they have to be force-fed. And that's exactly what they've done all over the world. They're starting to do it in the United States as well. They're indoctrinating people and the children. That's where they go. They go over the weak minds, not the weak minds, but the growing minds, and they change it. Because you take a look how they literally indoctrinate you. So if you homeschool a child at home, you can teach him things of the Bible, things that will nourish him and grow him. But now you have to physically, he becomes a piece of property. So they're owning you. So it just shows you how incredible communism has got in. It's right on our doorsteps. It's not taking over already. It's absolutely scary.
There's one of my good friends, Ken Giverden, always refers to the big slave plantation. What the Jews or whoever, I'm not saying it's the Jews, but the powers that's not supposed to be, what they are actually creating is a huge slave plantation. Because, Jason, what they will do is they will take the best minds and put those best minds in the so-called Ivy League universities, which are run by communists.
So the best, the people that's supposed to give leadership to their people, they are indoctrinated at school, and then they are brought into that system of the universities in the United States. And I'm very sure this is repeated in Sweden and Norway and all those places too. And that is why our people do not have leaders anymore, because the best of the best are already indoctrinated in those facilities. But the outcome of this is the creation of a huge slave mass. That is all they want. They want people to consume and work. That's two, yes, two main purposes. And that is what they are trying to achieve.
Definitely.
That's why, if you take a look what I'm doing, you know, I'm physically walking, and I'm not the most educated person, I would say, you know, book-wise. However, I seem to be a lot wiser.
We've lost Jason. I think I cut you off, Andreas. I'm not sure I cut somebody off. I apologize. Please go ahead.
I was just agreeing with you, definitely, the indoctrination. And they're very, very well aware that from age 1 to 7 is the formative years of a person, and they try to strike hard there. So now, not only is it illegal to homeschool, they've lowered the age so that you have to send your children to school at age 6. And before that, it is basically the norm to send it to daycare every day, basically the entire working day from 6 a.m. till 5 p.m. Children are spent in these government facilities being indoctrinated with all kinds of garbage. And the parents then pick them up at 5 o'clock, cook some dinner, and then go to bed. So the family time and the family unit is basically not raising the children. It is the state from age 1 all the way till it's 18. So it's very sad.
And here's a thing that people with children in state government or state-controlled education should really remember. No matter how tired you are, how much you just feel like you want to go to bed, if you have kids in these institutions, make sure that every single day, and I mean every single day, you take time aside and you sit down with your kids and ask them to tell them about their day. Not only will it create the bond between you and your children that you're actually interested in them and what they're doing, but it will also allow you to hear what they have been taught that day. You need to keep on top of the things that what they're being taught every day that they're going to school. If you hear that they've been told something like, oh, there is only there's no such thing as two genders, for example, then you have, at the same day as they have it fresh in their mind, a possibility to correct that wrongful statement, make them realize. So no matter how tired you are, always ask and sit down with your kids. Know what they're being taught. Just don't, if you can't homeschool, make sure that you know what they're being taught and correct them where they've been given the wrong information.
Thank you. We lost Jason for a while, but Jason is definitely back. Let's see if we can hear. Jason, do you want to contribute to this discussion about families?
Yes, I think I got a bit passionate. I walk when I talk, so I think I might have walked into a no-go zone over there. But yes, man, the clear and apparent fact that they're attacking families and dividing families is spot on. I did miss what was said now, but I know for a fact that most of us will agree that they're attacking the family and they're separating the family, but they're taking it all boils down to they're taking the authority away from the man. That's why these feminists are degrading their own kind. They're degrading to women. They're not supporting women, and they've divided the family and they've taken the authority away, and they're playing on hedonism. They're playing on the feelings of a woman so that the woman feels, for example, that she can do a transgender on her 10-year-old or 7-year-old, because they're attacking the family. They're attacking the foundations, and I see it as a biblical attack, because your family is a unity between God. It's a promise and a vow between God as well.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, we're coming up to the last few minutes of our show. Can you believe that 2 hours has gone? But yes, we're actually there. From both the all three of you, Jason, you go first. your website and where people can contribute to your walk, etc. And then please, my beloved brothers from the north, you can also use this platform to promote your party.
Well, first of all, thank you to you, Skulk, and to the gentleman from Sweden and all around. That is absolutely incredible. Thanks for coming onto the show. I learned so much, and it's good to know that you guys support us over there and that you're spreading the word for us. The walk that I'm doing, it's become very, very expensive, especially with the weather. I stay in hotels due to the fact that I've got so much stuff with me. I also have a website, which is www.boerextinction.org. Boer Extinction, so that's B-O-E-R extinction.org, and stand for nothing but the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm not part of any group or agenda or any association, and if you can go ahead and donate on that, it goes directly to me. It doesn't go through any community or anything. It goes directly to my bank account, and that's boerextinction.org, so B-O-E-R extinction.org.
And Jason, tell me about shoes, because I know shoes has always been a problem. Do you rather want people to donate money for shoes and mention the amount that you need? Or do you want him to rather buy you shoes and maybe come and drop it off at some point where they can find you?
So I've actually I've gone through 6 pairs of shoes now. I'm on my 6th pair. So if anybody wants to donate, it costs about $110 for a specific pair that I have found after my studies that work excellently. But if I can ask, if anybody wants to go onto my website and contact me in order to pay for a hotel for 3 to 5 nights, that would be a great way to contribute as well, because a lot of the time what happens is they've got free nights to use. So if you can go and contact me, either give me a donation and say it's for a hotel, or you give me a donation, or you just call me and say we want to book a hotel for you for 3 to 5 nights, and I'll give them the area we need to be in.
Okay, because how you walk, you walk during the day, and then during the night you actually go and sleep at the hotel. You do not sleep next to the road. Obviously, you would have been dead by now if you did that. So shoes and accommodation, those are the two main things that you need at this point in time. Food, that comes from the other donations maybe, but accommodation and shoes, those are the two main things.
Yes, that's correct. So on boerextinction.org.
Thank you very much, my friend. Andreas, from your side, how can our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. We have an English language website, nordicresistancemovement.org, which we post ideological articles. We also post articles from our activities and our seminars, and with pictures and videos. Sometimes we put subtitles for the English language or English audience as well. We have a live radio show called The Nordic Frontier every Tuesday at 8 o'clock Swedish time. So not today, because we're doing this instead. It was very nice. But normally on Tuesdays, you can find Nordic Frontier on nordicresistancemovement.org. And also once a month, we have the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg, and his colleague Fredrik Wedeland. They do a show called Leadership Perspective, where they take the official stance of the Nordic Resistance Movement in different questions. They have been doing 3 episodes, I believe. They've been talking about what is Nordic National Socialism and what is our thoughts on race and the peoples and such. So we're looking forward to the next episode this week, I believe, or maybe next week. But you should check out nordicresistancemovement.org, and you'll keep up to date with what we're doing.
It's as simple as that. Nordic Resistance Movement, and I'm very sure if you Google it, you're going to find it anyhow. We have the link. It will be posted also. I will post it also on Radio Free South Africa tomorrow or the day thereafter. So it's very easy to find you and to go and have a look at what your movement is about. Gentlemen, during the last few minutes, Jason, from your side, where are you going now? What's going to transpire the next week and a half, 2 weeks until we speak again? And then Andreas and Mike, from your side, what's up? What can we look forward to from your organizations? Jason, you go first.
Alrighty, so tomorrow I have a great interview with Jesse Lee Peterson on his YouTube channel. And then I'm going to be walking. Tomorrow is also another big day for my walk. I will walk approximately 33 miles tomorrow, even though there are hills. And then I'm going to the town of Knoxville. And then the next time we will chat, I will be in the mountains. So my voice might be a little bit more quiet because I will probably be nice and exhausted. But it's faith can move mountains. So that's where I will be. I should be in the Appalachian Mountains within 2 weeks. However, I actually on the 19th, I will be taking a 5 days off in order to go to a court case in Texas. For the business plan that I'm presenting to President Donald Trump at the end of my walk.
Excellent, excellent. And yes, the mountains are going to be tough, but thankfully you're going into the Northern Hemisphere summer. I was just very scared that you're reaching the mountains while it's still very cold. So thank God that things have actually worked out better now for you to reach the mountains when it gets a little bit hot. Andreas, Mike, from your side, what can we look forward to?
Well, we could mention that on the 1st of May every year, we have a demonstration for the Nordic worker. It's a National Socialist tradition. And there is an article on NordicResistanceMovement.org right now. There are no details yet of the marching route and times and specific places, but it's going to be in the fourth largest city in Sweden is Uppsala this year. And it's a very nice event to go to if you want to get into contact with us and get to know us and meet real members. So we do invite people from all around the world to get into contact with us, and you'll find the details on our website.
And also I'd like to add that, like, if people want to keep tabs on what the movement as a whole is doing, so on NordicResistanceMovement.org, there is a section called Resistance News, basically. It's called Resistance News, and there we have updates all the time. The movement does hundreds upon hundreds of activisms every year across the Nordics. So either you can look through that to see what we're doing or get inspiration to do something similar in your part of the world.
Excellent. And the town in Sweden, Uppsala, I know the town. I have not been there, but I know the town very, very well. There's also a large Viking museum, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. It's also a very red university town and also very badly stricken with racial strangers. So it's going to be very exciting to go there on the 1st of May.
I see your strategy. Like the old National Socialists when they took over Berlin and Dresden and those places. Maybe that's a good thing. And you're definitely going to have resistance from Antifa. I'm very sure. I really enjoyed that, gentlemen. We came to the end of a tremendously nice program. Thank you very much, Jason. Thank you very much, Andreas, Mike, for your participation. It was really very nice. And yes, I look forward to hearing from my people in South Africa what they think of what they heard tonight. Thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks once again, everybody. God bless all of you.
Okay, thank you, folks. Next week, same time, same place, Radio Free South Africa also delayed broadcast, and then I think on about six other channels we broadcast this specific program. Thank you very much, Pat Rabbit, my producer. That's it for the evening. Good night and sleep well.